Hello, and welcome to South Florida Opinion Live with the Sun Sentinel Editorial Board. Today is day 9 post Hurricane Irma, and we're trying to get back to normal. Throughout the storm, Sun Sentinel offered these update shows here at noon, and we want to continue to engage you in the questions and concerns that you have. So please, in our Facebook comments section, you know, tell us what you think. What's been your experience? Is your power back on? Power seems to be the story of this storm. Yeah. So we want to talk about FPL. We want to talk about what happened in Hollywood Hills, tragedy that happened in Hollywood Hills, and some other issues coming out of the storm, including, my God, there's another one on the horizon. Yeah. Jeez. Oh, I can't take it anymore. So let's start with the storm and its aftermath. Does everybody here have power back?
I have power. I got my power back Thursday night. I've never been more grateful for AC in my life.
Me too. How about you, Andy? Yeah.
I've had power since the day after the storm, so I'm not very popular with my fellow editorial board members. But we're good to go at our house.
And how about Deb? Deb Ramirez is our newest member of the editorial board.
I got mine back on Tuesday night, and my hair is grateful.
Yeah. How about your refrigerator? Did anybody else throw
out
everything?
Had to toss everything.
I know.
Yes.
Except a bottle of Moscato, which was unopened and still good.
Did you throw out, ketchup and mustard?
Yeah.
Did you?
Everything.
Did you?
Everything, yeah.
Oh, how about you, Deb?
I threw out most stuff. I found I was so disgusted, being without power for a couple of days. I just, to be preventive.
Right.
Yeah, the USDA says that you should throw out all the food in your refrigerator if it was without power for 24 hours, and in your freezer if it was without power for 48 hours. Mm. God, it just killed me, though, to throw it all out.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot of money. Apparently FEMA, though, you can get $500 from FEMA depending on how long your power was out to replace the food in your refrigerator. I didn't know that either. Aren't you glad we have this show to share information? So again, if you have questions, comments, want to engage, please join us in the comment section. So today is day 9. FPL pushed back the number or the time when we can all expect our power to be on. Lots of questions still about the restoration of power. For some of us, the power company was very clear that the way it was going to go about this was to start with assessing its power generating plants and the lines. Then it was going to go to the critical infrastructure like hospitals and police and fire and 911 command centers. And then to thoroughfares that had a lot of commerce, and then to neighborhoods. And our criticism of the power company has been that it told all of us last Tuesday that our power would be on by last night. Mm-hmm. But it didn't give us milestones of when we might expect to have the power on, kind of making us go back and forth every day. Is it on yet? Is it on yet? And then, as most people know, the website failed us. The mobile app failed us. It told us we had power when we didn't have power. And a lot of people were really put out. And I notice on Facebook and some of the comments that we've received that, like in Fort Lauderdale, where I live, Mayor Seiler says, you know, boy, we've been really focused on trying to get FPL in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And in the last, couple days, in the last few 60 hours, he posted most recently, they're here. But how would you guys assess, the response to the storm, and what are your thoughts coming out of this?
I think that kind of incremental rollout, knowing when they would be in your neighborhood or where they were in general, would kind of allay some of the frustration that people had. It wasn't that we didn't know that they were eventually going to come, because they are going to show up. But, where are you now? Are you at the neighbor's house? Are you close to me? You know, that kind of having a mobile app that works. We're all smartphone savvy. Well, most of us are. Mm-hmm. You know, we need that access. That's what it's there for, to help me understand, when are you going to come to me? And I think that would have helped us a lot. What do you think, Deb?
I think even if it's a bullhorn, you know, standing out on the street, if you don't have cell phone power, that would allay the fears. At least you know you have a reasonable expectation of when you might get your power back. But when you're in the dark, totally in the dark, as far as information goes, then your anxiety level is just going through the roof, you know.
Right.
And you need to make some decisions, too. Do you move? Do you, if you have elderly people or someone who's ill in your home, do you go? Do you go somewhere else?
Even if it's not an app, even if it's something as unsophisticated as a phone tree, a lot of neighborhoods have neighborhood representatives, and FPL could be in touch with those folks to say, hey, we'll be in your neighborhood on Wednesday. And word could spread neighbor to neighbor, as a lot of communication did after the storm. You know, as frustrating as dealing with the infrastructure breakdowns, as frustrating as that was, the communication breakdown was adding to those difficulties. If we'd just known that by Tuesday they're going to be in our neighborhood working on our system, getting us back online, it would have given us something to attach our minds to, not just wondering when is this ever going to happen.
Right.
And they could have done that. Their technology is advanced enough, I'm sure, that they know where their people are in the field.
Yeah.
And they could tell us, here's where we'll be in the next neighborhood over. So,
and this criticism is not on the linemen, not on the volunteers who came down. We appreciate what they did. And FPL was ready. They had them on standby. Let's go as soon as it's safe to hit the roads.
Yes.
And we appreciate that. But communication is so key these days. And I think that's where we can improve. And taking lessons away is what is the time, you know, it's time for that now. Now that everyone is kind of back online, what can we do to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Absolutely. And as part of that, let's talk about trees. I think most of us are so surprised to have close to 90% of FPL customers knocked out of power without having a direct hit from a hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they spent $3 billion hardening the system. And we got hurricane gusts, but mostly we got tropical storm winds. And in the face of tropical storm winds on Saturday, people started losing power on Saturday. Yeah. So what's with that? You know, part of what we heard is that, boy, the tree damage is a lot worse than we expected. Mm-hmm. The number of trees. Now, FPL says they didn't lose any concrete poles to the wind, which, hey, that's great progress. Mm-hmm. But then why did we lose so much, 90% of power, you know? And if it is because of trees, what was done to minimize that?
Right.
It's my understanding the power company has a responsibility to address tree trimming around its power lines. You know, that said too, so do neighbors, you know, so do people have a responsibility to maintain their trees and not let these junk trees grow up, and don't always expect somebody else to handle it. What are your thoughts, Andy?
Well, this experience shows us how exposed our infrastructure is. The wire, just the simple thing is wiring strung between neighborhoods can leave us all in the dark for long periods of time. And if you think about the mushrooming neighborhoods of South Florida and how some of it's well planned and thought out and some of it's just been growing on top of each other through the years, over the decades, we have a tree canopy that isn't as well managed as it perhaps should be. And that being said, we don't want to lose it. We want to have beautiful trees and landscaping in our areas, so there's got to be a mix. There's got to be a way to make sure we're staying on top of keeping the trees back from these vulnerable power lines that we rely on so much, versus just clear-cutting everything. FPL should be held accountable for maintaining their infrastructure. They have money that we've paid through our rates that are go toward things like tree trimming and taking care of protecting that vital equipment. But there's also other areas we could explore, like undergrounding wires, a costly effort that would take a lot to get done on a regional basis. But something I think we should explore to see if that would leave us in a better situation for the next storm.
Do you have a sense that it would?
Well, I you know, there's pros and cons to everything. There's a cost that comes with putting all the wires underground. There's a disruption to people's property and you know, taking on neighborhoods, getting fees to help pay for that. That's a negative for sure. But there's also a theory that things could get back up and running faster. If we didn't literally hang our wiring in the air and expect it to stand up to hurricane force winds and whatever blows with them. If it was underground, even if we lost power for a shorter period of time in our undergrounded wired areas because of a transformer a little ways down the road, if you just have to fix one substation or transformer instead of a whole neighborhood's worth of downed wires, maybe you get back up and running sooner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my question on the underground lines, FPL says that in windstorms, underground lines do better. But in wet storms, so those where, the, you know, if this system had stalled and given us a lot of rain and a lot of flooding.
Like Houston
mm-hmm. and Harvey, that flooding creates a lot of problems with underground lines. And I don't really get that. You know, I mean, if lines are 6 feet deep, or however deep they do it. I mean, isn't there kind of a PVC pipe or some kind of a protective shell that they can put the lines in? And then they'll say, well, but then we don't know if there's a problem, where the problem is exactly, and we have to go dig it up in order. And I don't really understand that either because, you know, we've spent $3 billion on this smart grid and we can't tell where there's a problem in the line, really? And then there's the expense. I mean, let's be honest. The real issue here, a big issue here, is how expensive it is to put all those overhead, dig them up and put them underground in conduits that'll protect them. And people don't really want to pay for them. Cities don't want to pay for them. New suburban developments don't want to pay for them. But if cost is the issue, let's talk about that. But if it's really that, you know, we don't know where there's a breakdown in a flood, and so we'll have to go dig here and dig there, there's just something about that. And the other question I have is, how did we do in this one? Because I heard that people with underground wires lost power too. Mm-hmm. But was that because of flooding or water or the water table? Or was that because some substation down the road got hit over, you know, got hit by a tree?
Right.
So how did they perform? Lots of questions on underground. FPL pushes back on that and tells us why not. I guess the question is, okay, FPL, how do we make it work? You know, how do we build a Florida for the future? Mm-hmm. Rather, because our economy counts on FPL's performance. People lost business during this time. We lost our food we lost huge inconvenience, and most tragically, people lost their lives during this.
Right.
So if there's issues, come on, smart people, problem solvers. How do we solve this problem? Mm-hmm. We getting any comments in the comments, questions
yet? Not yet.
Okay. Well, let us know what you think. You know, if you've got any questions, concerns that you'd like to put to FPL, we'll be happy to put them to
for
on your behalf. Let's see. What else were we going to do? We're going to talk about the Caribbean. Deb.
Yes. And I want to say is that, you know, we're all hurting from this hurricane. We're all reeling. We're all, you know, in shock of what has happened here, but let's not forget our neighbors to the south that got hit even worse than we did, and some of the islands that did get smacked by this hurricane in a very big way are now in the forecast path for Hurricane Maria. So as early as tonight, the Leeward Islands might be hit. Puerto Rico might get a direct hit on Wednesday. It's just time to think about what one government is responding, the various governments that are involved in the Caribbean. Certainly we are the United States with the U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. The president of France was visiting St. Martin last week, and that kind of helped to bring light to the needs in the French-speaking territories in the Caribbean. President Trump has said that he will be visiting the Caribbean. There is no date from the White House
yet.
There's no date set.
Oh, God, he should
but
go
there
sooner.
Has been. He should go sooner. I mean, yes, as soon as he can. And certainly, all people are deserving of our assistance, of our helps in times of need, whether it be government help or private help. But let's not forget that when hurricanes hit our shores, when we say, "Oh, the United States has been hit by a hurricane." A lot of times we forget that hurricane first visited U.S. territories in the Caribbean.
That's right.
Where more than 4 million American citizens live. And sometimes when they hear us in the media talking about a hurricane hitting the United States, we totally forget them, totally forget about them. So the Caribbean is certainly a place near us. We love to go there, cruise ships, we love to go on there on vacation, but now they're in need, and let's think about them.
Right. And you know, I just came off of a Caribbean cruise a month ago. I went to Turks and Caicos, which was hit pretty mm-hmm. badly. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to Barbuda, but that island was totally knocked out. The Prime Minister said it was reduced to rubble. You know, and tourism is the economy. That's yes. how these people make yes. their money. So yes. if we're not
Definitely
going there
so.
Because the island is flattened, there's no money income for these people. So you're right. We need not forget about what they're going through.
Barbuda, the U.S. ambassador said that for the first time in 300 years, no one is living there. There's no one. He said,
wow. Yeah,
not a single person. The whole island was evacuated.
Boy. Well, and I guess finally, let's talk about the nursing home, the Hollywood Hills Rehabilitation Center, where 8 people died.
In a matter of 12 hours, the span of 12 hours.
Yeah, boy, it just shows you how vulnerable people are mm-hmm. when they're in weakened states and already have their own issues, how mm-hmm. vulnerable they are to heat. Mm-hmm. And lots of questions here, you know, about... It's interesting. This week we'll be hearing a lot more from all of those who played a role in this. And there are people whose agencies and offices, you know, affected this decision. I mean, it starts at the nursing home with the management of the home. Apparently they made calls, they made alerts, they called FPL, but still, when they saw the conditions and they saw that help wasn't arriving, mm-hmm. Why did it take the hospital coming, raising the alarm to evacuate those people? I think there's questions for FPL and for the county mm-hmm. about why are nursing homes not considered critical infrastructure. On today's front page, we saw a retirement home where people are, you know, sweltering in this heat and crying for help, putting signs on their balcony, right. help needed here. And apparently the county listened to FPL saying, you know, well, it shouldn't be a priority because if we make all these nursing homes priorities, and there's over 100 of them, then we don't have any priorities and we got to focus first. There's an issue there. None of this is easy. It's not that we think any of this stuff is easy. Mm-hmm. And then there's the issue of the generator, backing up the air conditioners.
Right.
You know, the nursing home industry is letting us know today that they didn't fight reforms. If they didn't fight reforms, then why wasn't there a generator that worked the air conditioner here? And are you saying that all of these nursing homes have generators that support air conditioners? You know, why does it take the legislature to have to pass reforms for there to be a generator that powers the air conditioner? And then, you know, at the governor's office, you know, the governor has been one who has rolled back regulations. He fired the nursing home ombudsman. He's certainly acted over the weekend and said within 60 days, these nursing homes have to have cooling, the ability to cool their patients in the case of power outages, mm-hmm. that's good. But boy, 60 days, you know. There's installation issues, there's building code issues. Okay, so he's waiving all those regulations now. There needs to be a thorough investigation of what went wrong here. There needs to be a grand jury investigation that looks at how Florida failed, Florida's shame in failing its nursing home patients. That would allow 8 people to die in 12 hours.
I thought it was a startling figure. I'm gonna read from my notes. It says, Governor Scott on Sunday said that there are 3,110 assisted living facilities in Florida, 2,437 of them have power, which is wonderful. But that's 673 nursing homes with no power as of last night. That's a lot of mothers and grandmothers and grandfathers and people's families who are still sweltering in this storm. So, you know, I think it's wonderful that we have that many who are still having power. But we have to look at what we can do to better the situation.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Well, we trust these places to care for our loved ones.
That's right.
Not just dispense the medicine, but care for their day-to-day needs. And it's a sad lack of, this example is played out as a sad lack of oversight that is an industry problem in Florida, clearly. And we can't give them any more, give them the level of trust that we've apparently been willing to give them in the past. And it starts at every level. The people who are running that facility on those days may have been caught lobbing a few calls to FPL and the state, but they needed to do more than that. They needed to get people out of that building. Mm-hmm. And the state that was marking down the report, you know, getting fielding reports by phone about how facilities were doing, needed to be sending people to check on those facilities, because
right.
clearly you can't trust the companies that make money off the people in their care to tell you when they can no longer provide care to
right.
the people in their care.
Right.
It goes up to the state legislatures that you
yeah.
mentioned in years past missed opportunities to require these facilities to do more. So this is going to show us what can be done in the future, and we need to take those steps soon to accomplish it.
Right.
Yeah, and we also, as the public and as the voter, I mean, we really have to make our voices felt on this one. I don't care how hard the nursing home industry lobbied in the legislature. The legislature has to put, you know, the public good before the lobbyists. And we've gotten good at preventing the loss of life during major disasters. We're a world power. We're the most powerful nation on earth, largest economy. But then we have these unintended consequences where people are not drowning and people are not blown away during hurricanes, but then they die because of exposure, because of no air conditioning. And so we just have to get better at this and demand this from our officials and from
everyone. We saw some issues at shelters too, right, Andy? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think in the wake of the storm, we're going to have some real lessons learned about how to better handle shelters. A lot of people evacuated when they were called to, and if they just didn't feel safe in their homes, and that's a good thing. But we had some questionable operations at shelters, counties opening some up at the last minute because there was more need than anticipated, which raised questions about staffing at those facilities and having enough people on staff to accommodate the crowd and deal with these this influx of people who are scared and upset and you know, worried about things, and you know, were the shelters ready for them? Was the staff trained and ready for them? Counties are having issues about whether to go with volunteer shelter crews, like from the Red Cross, or have their own employees.
Which who didn't show up?
There were questions.
Where they
have been problems
in
this storm.
Miami did, yep.
This storm and other storms with volunteers not being where they're supposed to be. But then there's also a question of calling on municipal workers to come in during a storm and handle those duties that isn't exactly what's on their job description.
Right.
And are they ready to do that if called upon?
And they're concerned about their own families during
storms. Exactly. And we had shelters lose power, and we had shelters where there were, using schools as shelters where there were thefts from schools and damage to schools, not from the storm, but from the people brought in from the storm. So there's a real real issues there that need to be improved upon and shored up for the next storm so that we're better prepared.
Yeah.
Because we don't want people scared away from going to shelters. And that's what's going to happen if we have horror stories of shelters not being ready or shelters not being able to stand up to the weather or people not running them the way they're supposed to be run.
And not enough shelters for those people who have pets. It continues to be a problem because people's pets are their family. And they just don't want to leave them behind, except for those folks up in Palm Beach County who left their pets behind, some of them tied to the fence. Did you guys see that?
Awful.
Oh, my
Awful.
God. They're as bad as the looters, in my opinion.
They ought to be tied
to the fence. They ought to be tied to the fence. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, let's do parting shots. Parting shots is our, things that we didn't talk about during the week. Alana, why don't you start?
Okay. Well, you and I, we did some work on the
weekend,
but we weren't the only ones. there are still journalists and people in the field and people in this newsroom and newsrooms across the state who are still covering the storm, and it's long gone from here. But what I wanted to read was just a portion of a letter. You can write to us at letters@sunsentinel.com if you have any feedback from what you heard today or anything you want to talk about. But it's good to see people responding to the work that we do. Not only responding, but saying that it was worth, you know, our effort. And let me say this correctly. Kimmel Akaya, who lives in Pembroke Pines, hope you're watching, she says, "At a time when we were anxiously following what is happening with the storm, the Sun Sentinel and other local media were the only venues to provide accurate, real-time updates. I admire these people and once again recognize the importance of local media. And as a tribute, I decided to subscribe to the Sun Sentinel. So thank you for your service." And I think that is awesome. So thank you for subscribing.
Thank you. Yes.
It's wonderful.
Thank you, Kimball. Andy.
Lake Okeechobee was really spared a direct hit from the storm, mm-hmm. luckily, because obviously the lake and its the dike that we rely on to protect us from flooding in South Florida has had issues through the years and is in the midst of this decades-long rehab effort to be more secure. But that water's still draining in. The storm's long gone, but all that rain that came down in Central Florida is still draining into the lake. And today, the lake is now at the water level that's at the top end of what water managers prefer to have in the lake. And we still have a lot of wet season still to go. So I hope we'll keep our eyes on Lake Okeechobee and the threat that still remains there. And to address that, there could be more draining to the coast, which has environmental consequences and can lead to toxic algae blooms that we suffered through last summer. So a lot of ripple effects, so to speak, from the storm still to come, and Lake Okeechobee, I think, is one of them.
Okay, Deb, your parting thought.
I went to two free concerts over the weekend, and that had not been canceled after the hurricane, and actually they were places where the community came together, and everyone was so grateful, and so it was so healing. One was Tito Puente Jr. in North Miami, celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month. He's the son of the Latin jazz master, Tito Puente. And the other one was Cece Winan from the great gospel family at the our Center of Free Gospel. Boy, if there was ever a time to praise the Lord, that was on Sunday at the Arch Center. Everybody, and it became expressions of gratitude. We were all like so grateful that the storm had not directly hit us, that we were good, we were sound, we were maybe without power, but we were okay. And my thoughts about funding for the arts, boy, if there's ever a case to be made for maintaining funding of the arts, we had these two gifts to the community. Brought people together, brought people to celebrate. The yin yangs in Washington who want to cut funding for the arts, I would say, you know, think about moments like this when the arts that brings us together as a community. And I would just encourage everyone when they can support, go out and support live music.
Great. Sounds like fun. Well, my parting shot is that in not only did we lose all the stuff in our refrigerator, but when we were moving to our friend's house, and then to our family's house, and then to a hotel, and then back to our friends, I lost the charger to my iPad, and Tom, my husband, lost his glasses.
Uh-oh.
He lost his glasses. So he just had his prescription sunglasses. So we were going to go get new glasses, and you know, glasses are really expensive.
Yes, they are.
We went to this one store. You know, that it was going to be $600 if you want the progressives and you want the lens. Well, there's this store down in Wynwood. Now you're going to ask me to remember that. I forgot the name of it. But it's only $95 for a pair of glasses. And they have really cool styles. And, you know, I just think that I was happy to see that competition has come to the eyeglass business. So there you go, my parting shot. Well, that's it for us this happy Monday on day 9 of post-Hurricane Irma. Continue to share your thoughts, comments. Send us letters at letters@sunsentinel.com.
Just post it into the comments, so there you go.
And we'll see you here next Monday at noon. Hope you have a good, happy, healthy, safe week.